to the Creative Pen Podcasts. I'm Joanna Penn, bringing you interviews, inspiration and information on writing, publishing options, internet sales and promotion for your book. The companion website is www.thecreativepen.com, and that's pen with a double N. And here's the show.
Hi everyone, I'm Joanna Penn from thecreativepen.com, and today it is the 4th of October 2012 as I record this, episode number 139, which is very exciting. So today I have a fantastic interview on creativity, writing and independent publishing with my friend Orna Ross, who is actually one of those people who I really consider to be a mentor. You know, I think we all need these writers who basically know, they know so much more than us. And I'm very lucky to know Orna here in London. And she's a fount of knowledge, fount of wisdom. And she's also the founder of the Alliance of Independent Authors, which I love. It's a great organisation. So we'll be talking about that as well. As well as, I should say, her latest novel and what she thinks about this stuff. So I'll come back to the interview in a minute. But first of all, a little update. Because last time I told you that my manuscript, my rewritten, updated, not completely rewritten, but, you know, good tidy up, Pentecost, my first thriller, had gone back to my agent in New York, and I then discussed, or we discussed, the various publishers that she was going to pitch to, including the editors and the various people that she was going to approach with the novel. So that was, well, since I last updated you a couple of weeks ago, and surprisingly enough, I haven't heard anything. So I guess I feel a couple of things about this. First of all, I'm still very conflicted about traditional publishing. I kind of change my mind every day. This is why blogging can be so very good, because it really helps you write a considered post. If you take it very seriously, like I do, it can help you write something considered about your reasons for doing things. So the post I wrote on the blog about why I signed with an agent, all of those things still stand. So I go back and I read that post when I'm feeling a little bit weird about the whole thing, because I am a control freak, let's face it, and I do love to be able to publish on my own schedule. And I don't like waiting around for things. So I feel at the moment this kind of limbo, still feel in this limbo-y period where I don't know what to do. But what I've now decided is I'm just going to get on with things. And if I get an offer from a publisher, then great, I'll assess it at the time. If I don't, it doesn't really matter, because I'm already doing what I want to do anyway. So I'm getting on with life. One thing I do know is, regardless of whether or not I get a deal, I need to write more books. So I'm going to get back to Exodus, the third Arcane book, very, very soon. And if nothing happens with publishers, I will be publishing it myself before Christmas, because the book is, you know, the book's pretty good and exciting, and Morgan needs to get out there. And a little sneak preview on this one, Morgan actually does, you know, end up in bed with somebody in this book. I felt it was time she had a little break. So, you know, there's a bit more romance and a little mystery there. And yeah, I've really enjoyed writing Exodus, so I want to get it out there. So anyway, that's kind of my update on my thrillers. I really want to get on with it regardless. Well, you know, I also want to get back to this Hunterian idea I've been talking about for months, but I've been waiting for the time. And, you know, maybe I'm going to do that as my NaNoWriMo novel, which I'm really thinking about. And I urge you, if you don't know what NaNoWriMo is, National Novel Writing Month in November, you basically write 50,000 words in a month. It's a great, great program to do if you want to get some first draft material together. So I might do that in November this year as a real challenge to get some of that stuff done. What else? Okay, I'm also doing some like work for hire, not writing under my own name, to keep income coming in. I'm writing some novellas, and actually I'm really enjoying writing that shorter length of 20 to 30,000 words, which there are a lot of shorts selling very well on Amazon at the moment. So if you do have short novellas, consider publishing them, you know, once they've been through an edit and cover design and all the usual things you would do. But there's absolutely no reason that you can't publish shorter books. One sort of success story out of these sort of novella format is Wool by a guy called Hugh Howey. Amazing set of novellas which together make a book, you know, a really long book. But he has his books have been optioned by Ridley Scott for a movie, so that's really exciting. Anyway, so I'm doing that. I'm also working on creating a new multimedia course, and this one is a little bit meta because it is a course on how to create multimedia courses. Because I keep getting emails from people who say, you know, how did you create that Pro Writer series with CJ Lyons, or, you know, how did you create your Blogging for Authors course? So what I'm doing is I'm pairing up with a women's business group that's not just for women though, guys. The course will be available to everybody, but it will be very much focused on the business aspects. So if you are an entrepreneur and you want to expand your business into multimedia products, you may well find this interesting. And I've got a little 25-minute talk on this topic. If you're interested, you can go to thecreativepen.com/multimedia, and there's a talk I did about how I use multimedia in my business. So you can have a look at that. That's free if you want to check that out. And next, the next podcast, I should have more details on that particular course. What else? Okay, well, I did go on a script writing weekend, which I was going to tell you my lessons learned, but my main lesson learned was I don't want to be a screenwriter, which is hilarious, really. The main thing I really felt was how much, you know, I think screenwriting is fantastic. If you do it, brilliant. I just feel like there is a quite a limited way of publishing and distributing your work if that's the way you do things. You know, whereas now with self-publishing, we can publish on Kindle, Kobo, you know, Smashwords, Apple, wherever. Screenwriters, you can't just publish a screenplay. People don't buy screenplays to read like they do novels. So there's a much smaller, you know, a very tight way of getting these things accepted and specific agents, and then obviously so few get actually made into movies because they cost so much money. So it was really good to go on because it made me realise how lucky we are to write books, because it's so easy now to get books out into the world. What isn't easy is marketing and selling them. So, yeah. But the other thing I wanted to say, and this is my final little update, is that I've been having a lot of issues with my Amazon account the last couple of weeks, and can't change my pricing. My account screen, the payment area is a bit screwed up. And on Apple, my, you know, this very podcast has been having issues in the Apple store. So I'm currently stuck in the help desk queues of Apple and Amazon. And I'm sure you can imagine it's tough being stuck there because you're nobody and they're these massive, you know, companies. And what it's made me realise is the massive importance of your email list, because I have an email list now which is, you know, quite big, and I've been growing it for years. I use AWeber, and you can find an article on how to create an email list on thecreativepen.com/marketing. But essentially, if Apple disappeared, if Amazon disappeared, if any of these sites disappeared, I still have that email list, so I can still make income. I can still sell to readers. So being able to sell direct to an audience is so critical. So if you are somebody who does not yet have an email sign up list on your site, or if you don't have a site at all, I really recommend that you sort that out, just in case it all goes wrong. I mean, the people who build up a whole business on Facebook are basically, there's a phrase for it online, it's called digital sharecropping, where you build up your business based on somebody else's business, and then if they go under, you're screwed. So this is why it's very important to build an email list, because then you can always sell books. So that is my little bit of my little tip for today. As ever, I love to hear from you. I love to hear comments about the podcast, and you can send your questions or your comments to joanna@thecreativepen.com. That's J-O-A-N-N-A @thecreativepen.com. Right, let's get on with the interview with Orna Ross. Hi everyone, I'm Joanna Penn from thecreativepen.com, and today I'm interviewing Orna Ross. Orna is the author of 6 literary novels, as well as creative non-fiction and poetry, and she has experienced every side of the publishing journey. She's also the founder of the Alliance of Independent Authors, and Orna is Irish and has a lovely accent, but she lives here in London. So welcome, Orna.
Welcome, Joanna. You have an accent too.
Yes, well, everyone will love hearing your accent today, I know. So let's start with your fiction before we move into talking about publishing, because I've heard you proudly claim that label of literary fiction, but you also admit that there are fewer sales in that genre. But can you try and define literary fiction for us and why you're so passionate about that type of writing?
Yeah, well, I don't like categories, to be honest, when it comes to writing at all. And I think categories are really about bookstores, be it a bookshop, a physical, you know, putting it up on the shelf, or be it on the shelf of Amazon. It's really for buyers to know where to go and sellers to know where to sell. And writers don't really approach it that way. And I think particularly maybe writers who fall into this category, one of the joys of indie is that you can define all these things yourself. And certainly if literary means obscurest, difficult, hard to read, experimental, disappearing up its own ass, that kind of, not the kind of literary I am, or that it's more an aspirational thing for me, really. For me, you might call literary the category that isn't a category in a way, because it, you know, a genre writer very comfortably goes into the container that is their story, and a lot is laid out for them there. Somebody like me can't do that. I often wish I could. I did try when I was younger to write a romance novel miserably, and you know, I would like in some sense, and it's not in any way thinking that literary is better writing or anything like that. There is great writing in all categories, and there's crap writing in all categories and everything in between. So it's nothing to do with that. For me, it's as I said, it's an aspirational thing. It means that the story, in a sense, comes to me and takes charge, and I follow where it goes. That's one dimension of it. A second dimension is to do with taking pains over the language. The story is very important to me. All my stories have twists and turns and surprises, and take some plotting. They don't, you know, they're not in any way sort of descriptive feasts, or I'm not a particularly figurative writer. My style is very plain, really. But for me, it's about taking pains with the language and with form, and with, in a sense, as I said, the story leading and the language leading. I like Browning had a sort of a statement where he said, the aim makes great the life and the attempt. You know, it's the aim, not the outcome. He said something like, try to be Shakespeare, leave the rest to chance. Well, you know, I'm not Shakespeare and I never will be. But I like to, when I sit down to write, try to unleash my inner Shakespeare. And so that's what it's about for me, really. And that, for me, is literary. It's the category that isn't a category.
Mm. And because I've read a few of your novels now, and there's definitely aspects of kind of mystery in there, contemporary women's fiction, I guess, is what's called when we talk about relationships. But one of the things that I really like about your books, and I'm a sucker for setting. I mean, I love traveling and I love reading about, you know, I read a lot of travel books, and your books have a brilliant setting in Ireland. Obviously, that's one of the themes of your books, but also San Francisco, which I've never been there, and it was really great to read about that. So can you talk about the importance of setting to you and how you weave important places in your life into your books?
Yeah, setting's really important to me as well. One of the things about literary fiction that's important to me is that allowing a novel to do what only a novel can do. So a story can be contained in a joke, in a soap opera, in as we say, genre fiction. All day long, actually, we're telling and hearing stories, giving stories out, taking story in. For me, what's interesting about the novel, to me, the novel is the pinnacle of human achievement, actually. Absolutely, and I don't say that likely, I absolutely mean that. It contains the best of the writer in terms of their imagination, in terms of everything they know. And I try to bring all of that into the fiction. And the container for that is the place where it happens. We're so interwoven with the places that surround us. We are, in some sense, the places that surround us, because what we see and feel and touch and taste and so on, that's what a novel is, in a way, the texture of the experience within the container. So the setting for me is the container. If I get the setting right, and that's down to, in a scene, you know, if someone's sitting at the table, I need to see that table. It may never appear in the actual novel, or it'll be written, of course, at great pains and then taken out because it's not strictly relevant. That's another story. It may never appear, but it's very, very important to me that I can visualise it through not just five senses, almost through seven senses, have a whole sense of the underlying story and metaphor that is contained within that setting. So, of course, Ireland, I mean, for heaven's sake, we can't stop writing the Irish because there's so much to write about. our country is full of stories, and unusually, you know, still had a bardic sort of culture right up into the 20th century. Mm. So everyone in Ireland is a storyteller. Everybody's telling a yarn. And so, yeah, you'd have to, in terms of setting a story there, there's so much that comes with that historically and every other way.
Yeah, fantastic. And just talk a bit about San Francisco as well, because people might find that more of a surprise. And I know, you know, what I guess I liked is that you have this thread across the ocean. And I think some Americans might be quite interested in that.
Yeah, well, most of my readers are actually American, and people are often surprised when they find out that I'm Irish, even though the heroines in the book are generally, in my books, are often Irish or British. Because I love San Francisco as a place. I love it as a place to visit. At any time of the year, I'm there. If I get an opportunity, I'm gone. But I think I love it probably more as a concept. And it, to me, is a place, it's the only place in the States, really, where the American can-do attitude is very manifest in other areas besides the material. So San Francisco has been a first in all sorts of progressive legislation and ideas for a long time. It was a city almost immediately. It grew up overnight around the gold rush, so it's had a very vibrant city, diverse, multicultural culture right from the very, very start. I love that about it. I love all the way in which the sexual liberation movements arose there, the gay lib movements, all of that. As a little Irish girl growing up in a very small rural village, was really mythical to me. And it still has a very powerful sort of hold in my imagination. So I also write the novel that I'm actually, my most recent novel, Blue Mercy, that I'm sort of talking about a lot at the moment, is set in Santa Cruz, which is a small town about 100 kilometres south of San Francisco. And it's a very interesting place, sort of a little microcosm of that liberal, progressive attitude that I find so very attractive. Yeah. Did I mention hippies? Did I mention beats? You know, there's just, it's all there, isn't it?
It is. No, that's fantastic. So also with Blue Mercy, which I really enjoyed, I thought it was a fantastic book. You also write about relationships. And I was particularly, obviously, one of the relationships in the book is the mother-daughter relationship, which I'm not a mother, but you know, I have a mother, clearly, and my mum, like my relationship with my mum, you know, is that difficult one. And I think that there's a lot of truth in what you write, you know, in that. So I wondered if maybe you could talk a bit about how fiction almost helps us deal with these sort of elemental truths, and what are the themes in your own life that you tackle over and over again?
Yeah, I'm really, really interested in the mother-daughter relationship. I'm interested in mothers, you know, and the way we idealize that concept and then are really quite cruel socially, I think, to the real people and the way we, you know, we box them and so on. Because, of course, mothers are very powerful in our lives and have total power over us in our early life, whether they're present or absent, neglectful, cruel, kind, good, loving. It really doesn't make all that much difference, really. It's the power and the powerlessness that the individual feels. So I think every woman who becomes a full woman must go through that rebellion against the mother to become herself. And it's a story that's told very often. It's a feminist sort of, you might call it the central archetypal feminist story of the woman who needs to break away from the mother. It's very often presented as, you know, a sexually liberated daughter fighting against a constraining mother. I'm very interested in turning it around. And also, I have been both mother and daughter, so I'm very interested in looking at what it feels like to be the mother as well. So Blue Mercy, I went all out. You ask about fiction and its ability to sort of handle these relationships. There it is, second to none, really. Mm. It's all about, fiction is just a big heap of lies, but good fiction is all about the truth that's at the heart of those lies. And it's a truth that in some strange way, don't ask me, I don't know why, but this is why I do think the novel is a preeminent sort of human achievement. It's a truth that can only be got at through lies. So it is fiction. Of course, then there is that grain of truth at the heart of it. And everybody's always asking writers, you know, what part of your book is biographical? What part really happened? What didn't? And of course, you're a novelist yourself. You know, it's not possible to answer that question. You can't actually separate. By the time you're finished, you don't know what's true, what's a lie, what's made up, what's invented, what really happened and what didn't happen. And I mean, the strangest thing things happen when you write fiction. I wrote this book many years ago and the heroine has breast cancer, and a couple of years later there I was. I had breast cancer, you know. it's just the way in which it is interwoven with your life is mysterious. It's meant to be mysterious and we're not meant to be too analytical about it.
Mm. Well, on that, I didn't prep this question, I know, but you know, how has writing helped you? Because before I physically met you, you know, I googled you and I saw, you know, pictures of you with cancer, and you've survived that, and you're an amazing person. And I wonder how much that writing has helped you survive those things, and
writing saved my life. I mean, I am writing's forever till death do us part. I can't live, I don't know how to live if I don't write. It's that simple. If I'm not writing for a week, I'm antsy, I'm out of sorts. I have to write. And yes, it helped me enormously when I had cancer, but it helped me enormously long, long ever before that happened. And it helps me through the good times as well. It helps me to see what's really there, to see through to the heart of things, to see what's important. It slows me down because I tend to be a bit hyper. So it just does so much for me. I write in two ways. It's obviously the actual books and the published work, as it were, the work that goes out into the world. But every day I sit down and I also free write for about 20 minutes. And probably that's is the most important transaction of all in terms of writing. But words alone are certain good, W. E. Yeats said, and I live by that, really. I couldn't live without it.
Fantastic. And just another question on the creativity there, because you also, I know creativity, you have a blog and you blog about creativity and stuff, and that would be a whole nother conversation. But what would be the sort of number one thing that you want people to realise about creativity in themselves? Because a lot of people don't have any confidence. I get a lot of emails from people who just say, I just don't know what I'm worth. And I think that has a lot to do with creativity. What do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. As you say, Joanna, this is a whole separate conversation that I'd love to have sometime, actually. But we are all creative. That's an absolute fundamental. We couldn't be having this conversation if we weren't creative people. And the creative process is very poorly understood. One of the things that I'm up to my eyes writing at the moment is actually a couple of pamphlets about this very subject. Mm. We are all creative. We've got to find practices to allow us to tap into that and to strengthen that within us. We're all very poorly educated in terms of our creative intelligence because we've all been through an education system which privileges another important dimension of our intelligence, but the more conventional, analytical, rational, etc. And we've all, that schooling system grew up around the same time as the Industrial Revolution, and it is very much a sort of a formal, you know, just look at the desks and the way they're laid out, you know, it says it all. So we have this fundamental, huge, so powerful, so transformational intelligence within us, and it doesn't just apply to books and art and, you know, the things that we label creative. This process is ours for everything, for creating money, for creating relationships, for creating a home, creating dinner. You know, it really is, it's really about creating every moment and being awake and losing the staleness that happens when we set up conventional sort of mental patterns and meet people and places and situations with it. And obviously writing cuts through that, and good writing brings us alive and makes us aware and brings us into presence, really, and awareness of what is ours and what is everybody else's. So I'm so interested in the creative process and how it can be adapted and applied to every single human situation. So I'm writing a lot about that in non-fiction terms at the moment.
And I advise people to go and have a look at your site, and I'll include links there. But it's something that's so important to me because I never thought I was creative. And then, you know, with my story is I had an affirmation, and my affirmation was I am creative, I am an author, which I started saying for over a year before I actually had the courage to go further and actually create something. So I'm very passionate about helping people with this too. And it has to be a mindset shift before you can do it, really, doesn't it?
Well, that's exactly how it works. It begins with the imagination. If you imagine it, it will happen. And it's as simple as that. It's actually quite a simple process. And we've been robbed of it in a way. It's not about striving or working really hard. There is a whole side of life that it's necessary at a later stage. But in the early stages of creation, of the creative process, there are about 7 stages roughly. In the early stages, it's actually quite an easy thing. It's about allowing it to arise and using the imagination, harnessing the imagination in a way that is productive. And very often for most people that isn't about adding anything else at all, adding more work or anything like that. It's about taking things away. It's about getting out of our own way so that this thing can arise through us. But I mean, what you did is core creative practice. Essentially, you put a seed down in your imagination, you watered it with something, effort, work, whatever it might be, and then you allowed it to grow. And well done you. You're not creative. Ha ha ha.
Yeah, I know. I know, now it's
crazy it is out there.
It's so funny though when I think about it now. Yeah, and this is another reason I'm very grateful for blogging, because it's great to have the point in time captured for me, because I can point to it and say, that's true. I didn't feel like that once, and now it's very different. So I really urge people to think about these things. I'll add some links into the show notes, so people should go there and have a look. But now I'm going to talk about publishing, which is very exciting. So can you maybe start by telling us a bit about your publishing journey?
Yeah, well, I'm interested in you talking. I keep coming back to the last question to answer the one you're asking, but blogging. Blogging was just, in my publishing journey, was just absolutely revolutionary, because I came from traditional publishing. I began as a freelance journalist and I moved on into various shades of media, editorial. I was an agent for some time. I ran a writing school. I've really been embedded in media, publishing, journalism for over 20 years. And then suddenly, you know, at the end of the noughties, people were talking about self-publishing, be it through blogs or books or whatever. And the sort of response within the traditional world was, well, you know, yeah, we're all self-publishers. You know, they're, you know, I might have gone that way when I was starting out too, kind of thing. But I was really attracted. I started off with the blog and very quickly realized, oh boy, I have a lot to unlearn. The first thing that hit me with like a lorry really was how much when you're writing for traditional media, you self-censor and you shape the material that they, whoever they are, want. They, of course, tend to be retailers or newspapers or not actually the reader, but the person in between. So blogging was very revolutionary for me. I started blogging about the creative process because I didn't know what else to do. I wrote my first blog on my second book, the launch of my second book, and I had all my hair had fallen out the day before and I couldn't wear a wig. I found I wasn't able to wear a wig and I didn't know what to do, and I just wrote a quick blog about it and went off to do it. And it was just one of those moments in a writing life that is absolutely electrifying and transformative and changed everything for me. So it led me on then to self-publishing, which I very quickly just really feel it's such an important moment in the history of writing. I think there are three key moments when we moved from bard to scribe, and the monks took over the writing things down, and then when we moved from scribe to print, and when we got the printing press in the 14th century, and this is the next one. And I just feel so delighted, privileged, honored, thrilled that I'm here for the self-publishing revolution. And I am really enjoying it. I'm taking I've got all my rights back from my publishers now, and I'm taking all my old books and I'm reissuing them myself, and I'm really enjoying that. I'm changing some, losing some, putting them into different shapes and sizes, and having a ball.
But you didn't really explain there that you were successful traditionally first, weren't you? You had deals with, was it Penguin, and you were in supermarkets, and I mean you had what most people dream of having. Would you just talk a bit more about that?
Sure, yeah. Well, it was my dream too. I started off, as I said, I was writing nonfiction. I was coming up to my 40th birthday. I realised, look, you've always wanted to write fiction, you're going to have to do it, get on with it. So I did. And I wrote a first book, and you've read it, Jo, After the Rising. It was long. It was about a period of time in Irish history. It was out of fashion at the time. It had a lot of things, and it was a very big book, so it had a lot of things going against it, so it kept getting kind of rave rejections. It got a lot of rave rejection, and some just straightforward no thank yous as well, but it got a lot of rejection, and eventually it was picked up by Penguin. I got a very nice, generous two book deal, and it got the whole supermarket chain store treatment, and all of that was fantastic in one way, and I want to emphasize that it was brilliant in one way, but it was not so brilliant in another way. And as somebody said to me, you know, I've been in the puppet show, I've seen the strings. And when you're there, and when it happens, there are, like everything in life, it was a mixed blessing, and there was a side of it that, as a writer and as somebody who's very committed to the creative process, I actually found quite frustrating first, and actually as the more I step away from it, I have to admit it was really quite painful. And I found the handing over the baby and sending it out into what is a very hard-nosed commercial world now. Publishing is kind of eating itself in a very sad way. But I think within self-publishing, we're going to actually break through and change that. I am both delighted to have been traditionally published, or trade published as I like to call it, and now at this moment I'm really enjoying self-publishing, and I think both of those will coexist very happily together and give each other a great lease of life.
Mm. Yeah, so I want to talk a bit about that because you're a friend of mine, obviously, but you're also a mentor to me, sort of in my career, and you have absolutely encouraged me to, you know, seek traditional publishing with very strong knowledge of my rights and knowing everything about things. But there, at the moment, there are kind of some militants both on the indie side and on the traditional side going the other way is totally wrong. But we've talked a lot about this hybrid model. So maybe you could explain how people could possibly see a coexistence of these two different types and whether it would work for an author to be able to do both.
Yeah, I absolutely believe it will. I think that it's a phony war completely. And it is only a war because of the historical way in which self-publishing has emerged. And I think, you know, that won't last. That's my feeling. I think self-publishing is a way to reach readers. Trade publishing is a way to reach readers. And each of those does what it does in a different way and may be suited to a particular project at a particular stage of a writer's life. I think we've got to be open to both ways all the time. I think we only need a word like hybrid because this phony war has grown up. In fact, it is really, you know, about writers claiming their power. That to me is the issue. What went wrong for publishing, I think, is that it became too focused on the bottom line and not focused enough on the writer-reader connection. And it became quite cynical, and the business grew very large, so you needed very big volumes of turnover. The discounts were savage. Nobody in publishing is making money at all. Everybody is just taking from everybody else, but the circle just keeps going around. And apart from a few big conglomerates, everybody's struggling, and nobody's struggling more than writers. So I think what we're seeing now is a way in which writers can reclaim their power through self-publishing, but that can only work if writers actually realise what they're doing. A lot of people are self-publishing in order to get a trade deal because they assume that a trade deal is better. And it isn't necessarily. It might be, depending on the stage that you're at with the book, but it might not. And really what it's about for me is it's about writers realising that this is an empowering tool for them, and that it needs to change how they are in relation to agents and publishers and the trade generally, because what happened with the way publishing was constructed was that, and because there are so many people who want to be published and only so many publishing slots, is that writers in a sense have been on our knees taking a lot of rejection, feeling that, you know, we're not good enough, and trying to fit into somebody else's box, essentially everything that is anti-creative in my mind. And we've got to claim self-publishing as an empowerment of ourselves.
Yeah, so you mentioned independent there, and some people are kind of saying that an indie author is just self-published, or, you know, there are all these things bandied around. What do you think the definition of an independent author is?
For me, an independent author is somebody in service to the book, the creative director of the book from the start, from the concept right through to reaching the reader and that connection. And that's the bit that I found painful to be cut out of, in a way, with Penguin. I mean, it interests me that a marketing team will sit down and have a discussion about how to sell this book and how to get it to readers and so on, and the very last person they would allow into that meeting would be the writer. That's a mistake, I think, a real mistake, and that's something that self-publishing allows us to rectify. So an independent writer, to my mind, may work with a trade publisher, may sometimes work with a paid publisher, may try to do it in as DIY a fashion as possible, you know, be very, very indie spirited about it. It can be any of those things. But key to it is that you see yourself as a creative director, that your vision is something that partners must buy into, and that buying in must be reflected in the terms, conditions, contracts and so on that are signed. So it isn't just a way to get into doing things the way they've always been done. That is a waste of an opportunity. for writers. And if that's the way this goes, that's a real, real tragedy as far as I'm concerned. It's got to be about writers realising that actually we probably know best, contrary to received publishing wisdom, we probably do know what our reader likes. And because we've got a global market now, there are enough readers to sustain each writer who takes the trouble to go out and reach them with their work.
And you said a couple of good things there. I like the empowerment aspect very much. I really believe that in the empowerment of the author, but also taking the trouble to reach readers. And I get a lot of emails from people who are like, I just loaded my book on Amazon, it's not sold anything, and but I never got an editor and I never got a cover designer and I never done any marketing. And I think that there is, you know, there's a lot that people expect at the moment and don't know. So I know that partly you've started the Alliance to, you know, to help people. So maybe you could explain a bit about, you know, why you started it, what is the Alliance, and then people can go check it out.
Sure. Well, I was very sort of only just self-publishing, just beginning on that trip when I thought, well, you know, what we need here is a sort of an alliance of writers, a non-profit association of writers working together for each other, because self-publishing is full of people who have no interest in publishing at all, no interest in writing, no interest in readers. They just want to make some money. And now, you know, this is a growth area in terms of income. So I went looking for that and didn't really find what I was looking for. I thought, oh gosh, you know, we need this, so here goes. Essentially, yeah. That's how it happened. And just kind of dipped my toe in water to see what other writers, other indies felt. Was there a need for it? How would we like to set it up? I approached people like yourself and others who were doing a really good job in this area to see if we could pull together a team of advisors who would be able to give. See, there's no shortage of advice out there. That's not what people are suffering from. People are suffering from too much advice and too little time. And it's really about how you can make a life in this indie world that works for you. And that's what people are not doing. You've got the problem at one end of the scale that you're talking about, where people are disrespectful really of the reader. They think, I'm going to publish, they're like kids really, I'm going to do my book and, you know, look, isn't it great, and everybody here take one, and really only mummy is interested. And then, you know, all the way through to people who are really just emulating what's already there, which is another problem of a different kind, trying to be almost too professional. For me, it's in the middle there. It's a sacred sort of connection of two minds, hearts, souls, imaginations meeting. I know what it was to me to be a reader when I was that little girl in rural Ireland all those years ago, reading about different ways to live and different ways of being was life-saving for me. And as I said, it is really so important. And that is what makes self-publishing for me so amazing, is that that can be direct. The touching of two imaginations, I'm going to call it, can actually just happen now. And there is no need for anybody else to kind of be in the middle. Unless we choose it, unless that's improving the experience for our readers. That's the reason to bring somebody else in, no other reason. So the Alliance is there to essentially to help people to do that well, to do it ethically, responsibly, and you know, to embrace the responsibilities as well as all the joys of self-publishing, because they are legion, they are many, and to help each other to do that, because it's a very fast-changing world. Lots of information out there, and it's very easy to get lost, get overwhelmed, and to give up, frankly. So it's about support, collaboration, connection, cross-promotion, anything that we can do as we work together. And it's also about being a bridge between the self-publishing writer and the existing literary community, reading agencies, libraries. You know, there is already a very vibrant, structured literary community out there, festivals, conferences and so on, and self-publishers need to be there and need to be there on equal terms, not off in some sort of publishing ghetto. So it's very much about bringing that together as well.
And I think we also want to try and change the impression, I guess, that a lot of the industry has of self-publishing, don't we? And we were at the London Book Fair and you did a marvellous launch, and I'll point people at the other video we did that day. But that is something important, isn't it? That we want to stop the kind of immediate response people have based on years of stigma. Do you think that has changed in the last year?
Yes, I think this has been a key year for that, particularly here on this side of the Atlantic in the UK. I think it happened a little earlier already in the US. Self-publishing is where it's at, frankly, now. The industry, there are still the people who don't know that it's happened. Yeah. And, you know, we see those popping up every now and then. But you know what? The good work does the education. We don't have to worry about that. All we need to worry about is writing a good book. Good work speaks louder than any special pleading or saying, hey, we're good, we're here. You know, self-praise is no praise, but good work speaks for itself. So that's all we need to do. Keep producing. Indies are producing amazing work. They're doing, and they're especially sort of the pioneers in terms of reaching readers and bringing their books to where the readers are. And they are teaching to trade publishing a heck of a lot about how to do that a lot better. So I think really another 5 years and we won't even be talking about it in these terms. It's going to look very, very different.
Fantastic. So where can people find you and your books online?
OrnaRoss.com. Thank you, Joan.
Well, you have lots of creative information and things, so that's fantastic. And the Alliance?
Yes, the Alliance is Alliance Independent Authors, a mouthful.org. But I mean, Google the Alliance of Independent Authors and you'll find it. Google Orna Ross and you'll find it. It's all there. It's not find.
Fantastic. Well, thanks ever so much for your time, Orna. That was great.
Thank you so much. Take care.
Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You can get more information on writing, publishing options, sales and promotion for your book at www.thecreativepen.com, and that's pen with double N. And you can also get your free How to Be an Author workbook at www.howtobeanauthor.com. See you next time.